You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. Wellness is a topic that has been on the agenda in the industry for the past 12 months thanks to our special guest this week, and that is mindset coach and Elite Agent regular, Jett Xavier. So today we're going to be talking to Jett about his industry first white paper on the topic of wellness. So first of all, Jett, Happy New Year. This is the first time we've seen you this year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you and all that stuff. It's great to be here again, and it's great to be part of history in the real estate industry, releasing the first white paper around the wellness and well-being of its people. So I'm very excited.
It is a bit of a historic moment, because I think there have been a lot of discussions about wellness in the last few years, but none in such detail as what you've gone into it. So talk to me first about, what is your passion for wellness? Why are you on such a crusade for industry wellness?
So obviously, being in the industry now for 6 years as an elite performance coach, I've done over 3,500 sessions, one-on-one training, keynotes, etc. And I've got a real insight into how the industry operates, but more so how the people in the industry operate and what their challenges are, obstacles, setbacks, what they deal with on a day-to-day basis. And it's been apparent for a couple of years now that most of the people that seek help to improve, there are issues that are holding them back. And a lot of those issues are to do with their wellness and their well-being. So a couple of years ago, I started to notice that. Obviously, I'm a mindset coach and a mental skills coach and a performance coach. But then I started to realize that the wellness and well-being issues were having a bit of an impact. So I thought I'd do something about it. I thought I'd put on an event, two-day event, with experts in the industry and outside of the industry. That became a national survey with over 1,000 people around Australia. That became four roundtables across four states with 55-plus influencers and stakeholders in the industry. And then now we've got Revive 2018, which is going to be bigger and better than ever. So it was, you know, through my experience of coaching in the industry and seeing what was actually happening under the veneer of everything's okay and let's just, you know, be superstars and make all this money and have a great life, there was another world of people who were dealing with a lot of imbalance and a lot of issues concerning their wellness and well-being.
So let's have a bit of a chat about that for a moment. Obviously, we highlight a lot of the good stories because there's a lot of agents that are out there doing well. But what we've also found in the time of publishing the magazine and doing this podcast and so on and so forth, that people just don't talk about when they're doing it tough. It's very hard to get under that veneer. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's a bit of a smokescreen as it is. Doing well, what is doing well? In the industry, doing well is earning a certain income, and that's defined as doing well. But our study showed that, you know, well-being and wellness doesn't discriminate against what people make. You could just be starting out in the industry, or you could be making $1 million-plus dollars, but you still can be impacted by, wellness and well-being not working. Mm-hmm. So it's not about, you know, being a superstar in the industry. It affects everybody.
Should we be, as a result of this research, redefining our definition? What does success really look like in the industry? Because I think there's a trend too these days that it's not all about money. I mean, a lot of people say to me, you know, like, I don't want to be a $1 million agent. I want to be a good agent that serves people well. But I've seen too many $1 million agents burn out. Is that something that you've seen as well?
Most of the people that come to me, they could be earning, you know, a small income out of real estate. They could be earning a great income out of real estate. But the point that they all bring is the fact that the model they're running is not working. It's having some sort of impact on their relationship, their health, some sort of impact on their job, their productivity, their mental game, their relationships. There's a whole lot of impacts that happen. So that's why they come to me to get help. And the research showed that loud and clear, coupled with the global research at the moment as well, that's been showing that, you know, we have a stress epidemic around the world.
What is the upside of having less stressed employees?
Let me just paint the picture about what's happening globally, though. You know, in Australia, the estimated cost of untreated mental health conditions cost Australian workplaces approximately $10 billion per year. This comprises of $4 billion in absenteeism and $6 billion in presenteeism. Presenteeism is overworking. So you've got the impact of $6 billion in that. The other thing is around productivity. One in five Australian employers report that they have taken time off work due to feeling mentally unwell in the past 12 months. Wellness and well-being isn't just being someone who's severely depressed or suicidal. It's not only that type a person. Wellness and well-being is about the relationship you have. It's about your happiness levels. It's about your productivity. It's about your fulfillment. It's about your spirituality. It's all of those things combined. When we look at turnover, the Australian government agency Comcare reports that organisations which do not manage health and well-being well are four times more likely to lose talent in the last 12 months. So there's a cost on it, there's an impact on productivity, and there's also an impact on turnover. There's a lot of upsides why we should look at wellness and well-being, specifically in the real estate industry as well. I mean, healthy employees are three times more productive than unhealthy employees. Healthy employees take nine times less sick leave than unhealthy employees. The healthiest employees work approximately 143 effective hours per month compared to 49 effective hours per month. Now, if you're a business owner or a principal and you're looking at an organisation, whether you're a small office or in multiple offices, that's an incredible amount of impact.
Sometimes more is less. Like, you could be there trying to hustle for that long, but in actual fact, there's diminishing returns.
Overworking or working extra long hours doesn't guarantee that you're effective or efficient, and there is diminished return. Now, around those messages, we need to start changing those, and we need to go, okay, well, here is the upside. Here are the benefits of having a healthier workplace or a healthier individual in the workplace. And they're positive impacts. I mean, with a limited talent pool and a competitive recruitment environment in real estate, a focus on wellness and well-being could assist businesses to become an employer of choice. Now, every office now, the big thing is attraction agent or attraction agency. So if more emphasis is placed on well-being and wellness practices within particular agencies, they can become an employer of choice, because people are starting to go, well, hang on a sec, we want to go to somewhere where we're cared about. We're not just a number. We don't just get thrown a phone. And people have our interest and our well-being and everything to the family and our future and what we want to achieve in our life at heart as well. Plus the return on investment. I mean, can be as much as $15 per dollar invested when you invest in wellness and well-being practices or models within the workplace. So there is a huge upside. You know, I shared this today at a conference in front of about 250 agents and principals. We're still listening to these messages and believing them. It's like how they apparently catch monkeys. They put peanuts in the coconut, the monkey puts its hand in, grabs the peanuts, and then can't get its hand out, won't let go of the peanuts. We're the same. We're holding on to messages and we're not let going of them. At the extreme sense, they're killing people. We still have people in this industry that unfortunately suicide and have those sorts of impacts, right down to people who just can't get to work some days because they're just exhausted. So we've got to let go of some of those messages. We've got to create awareness around what they are, but we've got to let go of them at the end of the day. The hustle and grind message, the message about sleep is for losers, sacrifice everything now and then you'll play later. Bronnie Ware, who did the Five Regrets of the Dying study, no one in there said sacrificing and then playing later was fantastic. They all wish they didn't work so hard. The research is supporting a massive shift, and Australia is behind in the shift in real estate. In the corporate world in Australia, they're pretty much up with the times with the global practices, but we are behind the eight ball. And it's because one of the reasons is, and this was a big theme that came out of our roundtables with those influencers in the industry, it's because people can't put their hand up and say, I'm struggling. Yeah, this is tough. And, you know, what I loved about Revive last year was one of the principals that spoke there, Nathan Casserly from Owens Casserly. He said the big shift for him around wellness and wellbeing came when he put his hand up and said, I'm struggling. This is too much. I need some help. And he put some good people around him to take some of the pressure off. And so for someone like that, you know, the bloke's bloke to stand up and say, look, even I find it hard, is a great example of leadership in this industry. But we're still behind. We still need more people like that to be able to go, hang on a second, it's okay to say you're struggling. It's okay to say you need a hand.
So let's look at some of the results of the survey. So 47% of respondents said that they had felt physical symptoms of anxiety in the last 12 months, either often or always. So that's almost one in two. So if you're a principal out there and you've got 10 people on the team, that's five out of the 10 that have actually felt anxiety in the last 12 months. 65% of people said that in the last 12 months they have felt stressed either often or always. 35% said that they'd sought medical advice. 28% responded not at all when asked if they had hobbies and interests to balance work. That's like one in three people. Is this any better or worse than other industries? And why is the real estate industry, do you think, gotten to this point?
I think it's on par with most industries, if not worse in some cases. The reason it's gotten this far is because real estate's a very cottage type based industry that was born out of the, let's face it, the hard work of those who come before everyone. I mean, these people that forged great businesses in Australia in real estate, these were really hard working people in a time when that was almost respected, and that was, you know, that's what you did. You worked 90 to 100 hours a week. You sacrificed family and time with everything. You put everything and risked everything to do it. It just was 24/7, and that's how real estate was built. But times have changed, and people have changed, and we didn't know what we know now about the health impacts back then. We didn't know about the impacts on relationship. We didn't know how stress operated and anxiety impacted on performance. We've moved away from the typical capitalist ethos of drive yourself into the ground and become successful to questioning those types of messages. And it's changing. And so the day where you got a phone and a desk and you got told just to get out there and knock on doors, well, that's sort of changed now. And let me say this, it's not about putting people in cotton balls as well. You have to still have to work hard. Well, I'm not saying that you don't work hard. You know, nothing comes without hard work, but it's how you do that hard work. My belief is if you can work smarter, not harder, then you'll have less of the impacts. And that's how I measure it. Don't come to me and say, I'm making $2 million a year and your relationship's falling apart. You're unhealthy. You get no time for yourself and you've got a nice car. So what? That's not success. That's not wellness and well-being. Come to me and say, well, I've reached a goal of my that I want to make in real estate to be the best that I can be, but I get time to see my family. I get time, flexibility to take it off. I go on holidays. I do the things that I need to do to take care of myself. I get to the gym, etc. That's a holistic, successful person right there. We're still carrying the messages from the past, but there's a bright future because there are people in the industry that are starting to make changes within their own little ecosystems and the way they do their business. You know, through Revive and getting this message out there, people are starting to embrace it. But more so, they're going, thank God, somebody's starting to talk about it now. Somebody's starting to say, hang on a second. No, it's not right to drive yourself into the ground, wreck your relationships, your health and all that type of stuff in the quest for success.
So we're sort of redefining success here as the ability to make choices in your life between what you're doing at any given point in time, whether it's work or family or hobbies or holidays or anything like that. Tell me, what are some of the tips that you have for making sure that you don't burn out? Looking at the survey again, we've got 25% of respondents that said at one point or another they'd experienced physical symptoms of burnout. What do you tell people when they come to you to talk about how do they shift into a better frame of mind to be able to make choices for themselves?
The thing is, you've got to create awareness around it first. People know something's wrong. They know not seeing their family, not feeling like crap every day. They know that something is wrong. It doesn't matter how much money they're making. So we've got to push more awareness around what is not working, why it's not working, and the impacts of that. But there are three things I try and teach people. The first thing is they need to reevaluate what success actually is. It's not hustle and grind. It's not sacrifice everything. It's not sleep is for losers. It's not all that type of stuff. It's not just money and power. So they've got to come to a point then and go, well, if it is that for them, well, there's going to be an impact. They've got to reevaluate what they think success is. The second thing they need to do is they need to redefine what it looks like in their own life. Adriana Huffington, who wrote the book Thrive, The Third Metric for Success, talks about human capital. Not financial capital. We need to redefine our lives by human capital. But what's happening is we keep withdrawing from the human capital. We're going to go bankrupt. So I think that's important as well. I mean, I had a young guy come to me the other day. He goes, mate, I've finally got to my goal of GCI that I wanted to make. I've got the boat, I've got the car, I go to the restaurants, I travel. He said, but I can't keep doing this to get that. Something has to change. So he has to redefine what his model of success is. The same as Toyota in Sweden, for example. Since 2000, they've done six-hour workdays, and Sweden are looking at putting in six-hour workdays across the board. Why? Because happier people do more at work.
Even in an industry as demanding as real estate, can you achieve as much in 6 hours as you would in the normal 8 or 9?
I don't think it's market-specific. I think it doesn't matter if you work 12 hours. It's about the impact. You can work 15 hours. I mean, I talked to Matt Steinway about when he spoke at Revive last year. He goes, I love work so much. I just love what I do. And when you have a person that's really passionate about something, they don't have those sorts of issues, if that makes sense. Yeah. It's like an artist. An artist doesn't paint 2 hours a day or 9 to 5. An artist will get up at 3 a.m. and start painting. They're not confined by time, but they're very rare people in the shape of things. And so we've got to take that into consideration as well. But back to what I was saying about the redefinition. I mean, look at Bill Gates and Buffett and all those giving their money away. They're redefining what success is to them. And then the last thing I talk about is re-engaging in what success should be in your life. And I think if those three things, if we start with those three things, reevaluating what it is, redefining what it is, and re-engaging in a life of passion and purpose and meaning, then we start to look at success in a different way. It changes the whole playing field. And I've proven in my own business and my own practice that I can take someone who's out of whack, bad health, bad relationships, and take them from making okay money to extraordinary money. That's part of their goal. But along that process, making sure that they recover the relationships, they recover the time that they need to have, they get their health back on track, they deal with stress more effectively. I've done it many times with different people to prove that it's not so much about working 6, 10, 12, 15, whatever hours. It's about what you're doing in those hours in relation to the impacts that it has. You know, a great example, a guy that I work with, we first met, he'd been hospitalized twice. He was writing about $600,000. So he had a fairly stable business, but it wasn't sort of accelerating and growing as it should have been. 15 kilos overweight, not seeing his family. You know, the normal sort of story that people don't talk about. To work probably 9 months or so, we ended up getting him back to about 5 days a week. He ended up going from 6 to about 1.1, doing less work, mind you. So he's working smarter, more healthier, better relationships, more time with the kids. Caught up with him the other day. He's back to 4 days a week now, riding 1.4. That's a choice, but he's developed that over a number of years now through saying, hang on a second, how do I do this smarter? How do I accelerate my business? How do I get better traction without it having an impact? As soon as it starts to have an impact, it's the wrong model.
The statistics that we talked about earlier, it's possible that one in two people listening to this are going through some sort of stress right now. Give us some tips that are really practical that can help people out, like starting today.
I guess the first thing from a real practical, fundamental, basic level is to be present. I mean, I like what Eckhart Tolle said, the author of The Power of Now. He said, everyone's trying to escape the present. They're trying to run away from it. When the present comes, they're trying to run to the future, or they're trying to run to the past. But everything that we want is actually in the present. So I think what's sweeping, you know, corporations around the world is mindfulness practice. And I think, you know, we're going to see a lot more of that. And mindfulness is as simple as sitting by yourself for 5 minutes and just breathing and just concentrating on your breath and just forgetting about everything. And there's a plethora of studies around the benefits of mindfulness on everything from your immune system to your happiness to your relationships and obviously productivity, etc. But the most important thing that happens with mindfulness is it decreases stress. And I think that's important when we're looking at well-being and wellness.
There's a lot of apps out there at the moment, isn't there, to improve your mindfulness, things like Headspace and stuff like that.
What I like about the apps is they note it for you, so there's a reminder. So we used to stick post-it notes everywhere. Our phone just buzzes, and it's like, okay, it's time to stop for 5 minutes and just be reflective and contemplate and meditate. So those apps are good. Happify gives you a little bit more functionality around, you know, building happiness as well, which I think is really good. So.
And meditation, that's not just Zen-based hocus-pocus. It actually does work, right?
Just be still. Yeah. Just for 5 minutes, just try and concentrate on your breathing. Just listen to your breathing. 10 minutes, the time's irrelevant. It's just the fact that you stop and you just allow yourself to free yourself from everything that's going around. What happens with that practice over time is it obviously changes the neurology of your brain, but it puts you in a better position of controlling things that happen to you, and it puts you in a better space. It improves your focus, it improves your mental capabilities. There's a whole range of things that it does. So I think that's one of the key things that people should start to embrace, and people are doing that.
Sometimes you have a feeling that's negative or bad or something like that, but you don't have to follow it around. You can actually sort of be still with it, and that's a much better option, right? And that's what some of these apps kind of teach you.
The practice you want to try and get into is like your mind's going to race when you stop to try and practice mindfulness. It's not about stopping the thoughts. It's about allowing them to come and go. Yeah. Just if you imagine the thoughts are clouds, you just let the clouds come and you just let the clouds go. It's just about finding that space. And the more you do it, even if it's 5 minutes a day, you just find that the peace and tranquility and the clarity that comes from that is quite amazing. So that's a place that I'd really start, because that's getting yourself back to basics. It's centering yourself. It's recalibrating your compass and realigning yourself. I meditate and do mindfulness practice every day. I probably do it probably maybe 5 times a day. Probably the longest is maybe 15 minutes. I consistently practice it because it clears my mind. It gives me very clear clarity around what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, what's important, what's not important. And then if I do get stressed or, you know, anxious, I go straight into meditation for 5 minutes, and it works every single time. The other thing is about detaching. I mean, people are so attached to things. That's where half of our problems come from. I mean, the Buddhists say all suffering comes from attachment. And I think in this day and age, we are attached to everything. Consumerism's driving us, capitalism's driving us, ego's driving us, status is driving us, everything's driving us. And we're striving and we're never arriving, as they say. That's because we're attached to everything. And when things don't go our way, it causes a whole upheaval of emotions and stress and cortisol that has a big impact on our lives. So I try and teach people to let go, just to detach from outcomes. Do your best, set big goals, want to change the world, awesome stuff. But if that doesn't happen, it's not a indication of who you are as a human. It's not a reflection of who you are as a human. If you had a go and you tried something and you wanted something to happen and it didn't, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Try better next time, debrief, work out how you can do it better, but don't be attached to it because that's where the suffering comes from. So I'm a big believer in that principle about detaching from outcomes particularly.
I've heard about this in the industry as well, where some people sort of get addicted to that thought of work-life balance. If they're not detaching themselves at the right point in time, then that can cause just as much stress as doing the opposite.
Well, it's an expectation and that creates attachment. So people have high expectations, which comes from the parenting that they've had. It comes from the society that they've lived in. I mean, we did an interesting sort of mini research thing on family and juggling family time. The biggest thing that came out for the mothers that contributed to that sort of little study was the feelings of guilt that they have for not being there for their kids or leaving their kids at childcare or babysitter or whatever they need to do. And that guilt comes out of an expectation that they've built up, that they should be this super mum and that they should be able to do this and they should be able to do that. And so that creates a lot of expectation. So expectation has a big impact on people's wellness and well-being because, you know, there's nothing wrong with expectation per se. It's about unrealistic expectation that creates pressure. So I'm a big believer anything that creates unnecessary pressure is not functional. It's non-resourceful. Why would you put yourself in that situation?
So what do you say to people? Because, you know, like everyone says, set big goals that make you feel uncomfortable and all that sort of stuff. What do you say to that?
What's happening, especially in business, is that people are living in Hollywood. It's like it's a big blockbuster movie. All this has come from that socialization through Hollywood and through LA and through that type of messaging. If that's cool, it's cool. But if it has an impact on you and it makes you feel like crap because you maybe don't reach the goal or it sets unrealistic expectations, we're here to dream as big as we can, of course. That's not in question. Again, it gets back to that impact. But some of our messaging has to change, you know, and that's another thing. It's the language that we use. It's the words that we use. It's like the hustle and grind message. I mean, I'd rather rise and shine any day than hustle and grind. Why can't we just rise up and be who we need to be and shine? Now, people need to educate themselves. Most of these studies reflect people that are potentially not happy. You know, who wants to be stressed? Who wants to have anxiety? Who wants to not have stuff outside of work that they can enjoy? That's not a happy existence. So people need to get educated. They need to read books like Thrive. They need to read books like Mindset, why they're thinking a certain way. They need to get educated and watch some, you know, TED Talks around happiness. And they need to educate themselves so they can start asking different questions. Most people have accepted their lot. So they've accepted this is the way it is. And they've bought into the messaging, which is non-resourceful for them. So I think education is a really big thing. And I think that book Thrive by Adriana Huffington is the perfect place to start as well. The other thing is people need to stop trying to keep up. You know, that's about comparison. I mean, but from the time we're born, we live in a world of comparison. We're comparing ourselves to everyone else. We need to stop comparing ourselves to anyone. We just need to be happy with who we are. Wherever we are is wherever we should be. Once we move across the comparison line, that alters who we are. It changes who we are. And then we start to become different people or we start to act like different people. Our attitudes change. The way we think about things, our guidelines for success, our compass, everything changes and starts to reflect what other people think we should be. And obviously it happens in adolescence a lot. As we grow up, we want to be in peer groups and want to be a part. It's the same thing when we get into business. And business is just like a big peer group. We're trying to impress people. We're trying to do what everyone else is doing. Why? Because we think that's what we should be doing. That's what makes us feel good as human.
Everyone does put the Hollywood show reel, particularly in real estate, because so many real estate agents use social media to impress clients and to attract new listings and that sort of thing, that, you know, you see Agent X and their social media profile looks like a Hollywood show reel. Do you think that that's the case, that puts even more pressure on?
I think two things about that. I love Facebook because, well, my feed anyway is positive, positive, positive. There's an element of it that I like. I like that type of sharing. But there's an element where, you know, it has an impact on the masses. A Marxism type of thing where the people's brains are just getting brainwashed. They're not asking any questions. They're just walking into the fire and accepting it as it is. So I think it's a great platform to share wins, and I think people should do that, and that's what it should be for. And it's a great platform to make people aware of issues around the world, and that's important. But I think it's also a tool where people can send out this message that everything is perfect, and that if you're not like this or doing this, then you're a failure. You haven't made it, or you haven't reached where you should reach. And that makes people really, you know, vulnerable. I think we need workplaces where it's acceptable to say, hey, look, I'm struggling a bit today, you know, my mental game's not on, or I'm feeling a bit crap, or, you know, something's happening at home and I just need a bit of space for now. And just creating those types of cultures where people can not feel like they're weak and losers for doing that, but it's actually encouraged, where they have a peer group within that office. The office is set up so that people look out for that, so people have got each other's backs and people are buddying up and saying, you know, how are things going? So I think more openness is helpful. I think more honesty. I mean, I was just spent some time with Josh Hart and his partner, and we talked about Looper app, you know, and what that's doing around the world already. Things like that are great for community. They're great for workplaces where people can share and talk and check in, and, you know, the Are You Okay days, and all this type of stuff is great. So I think that needs to be encouraged and supported. And we're talking about this today at the talk I gave about the industry redefining award systems. And rather than just GCI awards, why don't we have the happiest human in the office award, the most supportive person in the office, the most charitable person, the best father, the best mother, the best team player. Why don't we have those awards first and foremost, the best human, and then have some, you know, awards around income and that type of stuff. So that needs to change as well. And another thing here, which came up through the roundtables, most of real estate don't have a good onboarding system for people that come into the industry. There might be for some major brands from a training platform point of view. There's not a lot done similar to AFL or high-profile sports, where they'll sit down, you know, newer type players, and they'll say, okay, this is what you do with your finance, this is what you do in relationships to an extent, this is how you treat women or men, this is how you act in public, this is what you do when you're stressed, this is who you access, this is what happens when you're getting challenged and when you're finding obstacles, and this is what's going to happen in life, and this is the pathway through real estate, and these are the things that you're going to encounter, and this is the person that's going to be there for you to do. That's not in the industry to a great extent at the moment, and that's something I think that would help and is one of the major recommendations out of the Revive project last year. And so that's a sort of a top-down brand approach where we can start to nurture and look after the people that come into the industry and take care of them, and, you know, not wrap them up in cotton wool, but help them be the best version they can be outside of just throwing scripts and dialogues at them and showing them how to market maybe and do an open home and do a listing presentation, because that is not enough in this industry, you know, judging by the statistics we've been talking about today.
So what is next for the Revive project?
We want to run a couple more roundtables this year because there were a few more recommendations out of the project last year, and we want to basically, rather than this be a talk fest and a data collection fest, we want some things to actually happen. So we're going to meet with some influencers in the industry and talk about what are some core recommendations from the report or that we can create that we can actually start to act on and make happen in the industry. We're doing another survey, so we want to approach major brands like the Ray Whites and McGraths and Lang & Simmons, and we want them to run the survey through all of their networks so we can get some really big sample of data on this. So that's a big job ahead of us. We've got Revive on the 29th and 30th of July this year, 2 days. So we've got people like Timothy Sharp, Dr. Happy, Susie Green from the Positivity Institute. We've got Peter Gilchrist, we've got John Cunningham. So we've got a lot of people in the industry that have a great wellness and well-being message, and we've got some great experts outside of the industry coming in too, as well as our, you know, yoga that we did and our meditation and all the stuff that was great about Revive. And then in September we're looking at a 1 day where we just make people aware of wellness and well-being in the industry. I mean, it's like an Are You Okay Day, but we'll find something that we need to call it. But it just unites the industry, and we go, okay, for this day, we're just going to bring wellness and well-being on the agenda. But the idea is to have our own day in the real estate industry nationally where we can relate to and connect to and, you know, run through offices for that particular day.
Hug a Real Estate Agent Day.
And it's another chance to get it on the agenda, have more conversations about it. Because at the end of the day, like I said, the thing that people need to understand is that it's irrelevant the money that you make in the industry. Because you make more doesn't make it easier. Because you make less doesn't make it easier. It's irrelevant. Everyone is going through this. These statistics reflect principals that are great and successful, principals that aren't, sales guys, admin, property management, BDMs. So it's a reflection across the industry. So the whole industry needs to get on board with this, and at least for now, start the conversation and let's see where we can take it.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people behind you. It's a super worthwhile project and we've been very proud to be a part of it alongside you. To get a copy of the white paper, there'll be some links in the show notes. As always, Jed Xavier, thank you very much for joining in. It sounds like you're going to be a busy guy in the next 12 months with your Revive project. Thank you very much again and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.